Welcome to Let the Music Be Your Master.
Sounds good. And I think I will.
I'm one of your hosts, Brandon Arnold.
Jason Johnson.
And I'm Jordan Harmon.
All right. Today we are kicking it off with the 60s. Not the greatest hits of the 60s necessarily, but the songs that we think most encapsulate the 60s that we would put on the...
Or at least ones we want encapsulated, that's going to be preserved for re-engineering in our rock opera that's yet to be made.
Or whatever other way we want to say
what was your guys' experience doing this? Because this was and still is a little bit torturous for me. Mm-hmm. I'm super uncertain with my list. I'm kind of bummed out about stuff I've had to leave off. And I may even change it last minute while we're talking about it, but we'll see.
I'm going to do the same.
I was up till 3 a.m. working on it, and I loved it, but I kind of hated it.
It's hard to narrow it down. There's so much good music. It's like, it was so much easier for the 50s. Even that was somewhat hard, but it was easier. Like, okay, yeah. But you get into the 60s, it seems like there's just an explosion of genres, an explosion of... They're perfecting what they did in the 50s. Like, so the rock and roll, the very simple formulaic, whether it's doo-wop or the rock and roll, just the 1-4-5 type stuff was kind of perfected in the 60s. But then there's all these subgenres and all this, you know, psychedelic stuff, the British invasion stuff. There's so many different directions you could go. The soul, the R&B, the funk.
Yeah, you're starting to see innovation and people really start to break the rules in interesting ways. So I had, on my 50s list, I had 8 honorable mention on my list, and I've got 31 honorable mention on my 60s
list. Yeah, I got 15. This is just the list of all the songs that I thought... Could make the top 10, and I've got...
So 31 plus my 10, so I've got 41 total.
Yeah.
I've got a whole bunch. I didn't count. But are we ready to dive in, or do we want to talk about the 60s and 50s? Can I just say something about these decades? Like, we mentioned it a little bit, just the arbitrariness. Something I noticed as I'm going through the decades here is there's some of these songs I'm like, oh, this sounds kind of like the stuff from the 50s. And then there's other stuff that doesn't sound at all like it. And so in some ways, I think almost if you divided the decade from 65 to 75, some lists might make more cohesive sense, or 50 and 55 to 65. But it's just the way that the music kind of exploded during this time. And then you see it even more in the 70s and early 70s, how stuff really breaks apart. But that I wanted to bring that up just because a lot of the stuff I noticed that was really... really iconic and great, you know, we talk about the Beatles stuff, a lot of the British Invasion stuff, they're reaching back direct, they're covering 50s songs a lot of times. And that's another thing, is covering songs back here was still cool, and like it wasn't considered,
it was expected,
inauthentic, or it wasn't considered,
it was expected, and it was almost like part of the art. Like,
yeah, it's what you do. And that's how jazz has always been. You know, you do some originals, but a lot of it's covering, and it's cool. Like, oh, what's their going to take on this song going to be? How are they going to breathe life into this?
That is interesting. I've thought of this before, and I don't know that I've ever had the conversation. Why? So in the world of blues, there are standards that are just songs that are accepted as so great, anybody
you're gonna
should
play
them.
You got to know
them. In the world of jazz, there are standards that anybody can play and should know. Are there standards in rock and roll? And I don't know that there are. There might be a couple, like maybe Johnny B. Goode might be a standard. Yeah.
But no one's like, no. I've got to do my version. Like, right. Yeah. I mean, it's the Beatles and the British Invasion folks, the Motown.
So is it
people?
Because the aesthetic of rock and roll is so like rebellious in nature? Like, at the very core, it's rebelling against whatever exists.
What came before.
So we can't do standards because... standards are not rebellious, or is it just why?
Think of the punk aesthetic of, you know, you've got to do your own thing. Like, don't cover, don't be fake, don't be phony, don't be a poser, do your own thing. I think that's at the heart of like youth music a lot of times.
Okay, but one of the important things about the 60s as a decade is this is kind of when that change happened, when the bands themselves start writing their own songs.
Yeah.
They're not being written by songwriters. Mm-hmm. And
did you take that into account in your preservation? Did you give better, more credit for an original composition than somebody that was performing something that was written for them?
Probably. But I think not in all situations.
But I do have one for sure that wasn't written, mm-hmm. that actually is a cover on my list.
I came away kind of feeling like I wish we had that it was more okay to just be like, yeah, I'm going to do my version of this, not just as an ironic thing,
mm-hmm.
but as an actual, like, rock and roll had that tradition. And maybe rock, you know, maybe whatever. I know you don't like rock and roll, but you know, I don't, it's very clear. I had never thought of this, that there was a shift that covers became not cool. We need to stop.
Who's getting all these picks?
Out, yeah, yeah. knocking my head. Let's jump.
We didn't know anyone was recording.
We should also mention that at the end of this episode, we will also have three awards that we're each going to give.
This is true.
That we're going to vote, that we're going to fight on.
That we're going to fight on.
Fist fight.
Wait, do we have to come to consensus on the awards?
I don't know.
I don't think that's possible.
By ear. Yeah. There's no way it's possible.
We'll each nominate someone for the award. So the awards are, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got our most overrated, I guess we'll say band or artist or any other piece that you want to include in that. From the decade, we've got our most underrated, kind of our hidden gems, and then we've got our kind of our decade champ, like who won the decade, who was the mm-hmm. the victor, and we'll
this,
all...
this decade is too easy for that one. No real reason to even talk about it.
I love how you're just
you're that confident. Not so you're that confident in Glenn Campbell. You're that confident in Glenn Campbell.
It's fun to to like mention like something about how great the Beatles are and just watch your reaction.
For the record, I have brought
I could throw that out. You already know who we're talking about because
I've brought a research article from a university in England to back my position.
He's got an academic argument.
So you know, I'm bringing academics into this. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay, 1960. Anyone have a song from 1960?
Nope. There's some great music from 1960. I didn't add it. I had to narrow it down, but John Coltrane had some great stuff.
Is that in your top 10?
I didn't include it on my top 10.
Giant Steps was a last minute. It was a last night cut. I cut Giant mm-hmm. Steps from my top 10 at about 2 a.m. last night.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hard. And you shed a tear.
I was bummed out. Yeah. But it wasn't giving me goosebumps.
Yeah. No, it's a great song, but it's, yeah, I agree. It's, when you got to cut to 10, you just got to do what you got to do.
61.
None. No.
I do. Ooh. I'll start things off, 1961. You guys all know this tune.
Great song, great movie.
That bass.
It's really good.
And the voice, when the voice comes in.
When the night has come. So this is Benny King, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can anyone name another song by him?
And the moon. Oh, you got to bring that up.
No, I'm not trying to devalue it. I'm just curious because his voice is so dang good.
Yeah.
I guess I'm really surprised that there's not something else by him.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I don't know anything about him.
This is legitimately super good.
It's a great song.
Stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. I love the sound of it. I love the production. I love the emotion of it. And I love what he's singing about. I think it's all valuable. Stand by me.
If the sky. Great choice.
Love it. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to start things off. And you can hear, like, again, this is a song that last week, I had it on my list last week. I thought I had, for some reason, thought it was 50s. And it's definitely...
It has that vibe more.
Yeah, and it just shows the arbitrary nature of these decades. Like, this is... Like, what is really the difference between the music that came out in 61 and 58, you know? Like, there's more similar in those in that music than what comes out at the end of this decade mm-hmm. of the 60s. And yet there's still people doing more traditional R&B at the end of the 60s. And so beautiful song though. You can hear that kind of formula just getting better and better, the R&B kind of formula.
So I'm interested what this means for you for the your list to come, because I don't know what your balance is going to be of rock to jazz to country to R&B and soul.
Mm-hmm.
But you came in right out of the gates with a soul song,
mm-hmm.
with an R&B song. So I'm curious if this means that's your R&B shot, or if you're going to be more heavily R&B loaded. Than
well, we'll just have to wait and see, won't
time
we?
Time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be.
It's according to Wikipedia, this song is the sixth highest earning song of all time, royalties.
How many movies?
And Benny King wrote it himself with a couple of other guys.
Yeah.
Really good.
Excellent. I've got a 1962, if we're moving on.
Let's move on.
Okay, 1962. This is a song, this is kind of a nod to my older brother, who's a huge musical influence on me, 8 years older than me. So, you know, growing up, it wasn't like we were hanging out, but I was hearing his music all the time. And he's always loved this band and specifically the song. The song is Miserloo by Dick Dale and the Deltones. It's 1962.
It's in my own
Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
It's funny, I can't hear it now without thinking of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, super interesting, evocative, and the song itself is this like old song from like the Ottoman Empire that like the Greeks and the Egyptians and Armenians and different people all claim it as like their folk song. But Dick Dale and the Deltones, a surf rock band, made it popular for American kids and youth in the early 60s.
I like the brass in this one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't associate brass so much with surf music.
Is that Herb Alpert?
It might be. He was around.
It's super good. I love this song. Yeah. Like I said, it's on my honorable mention.
It's got those quintessential surf rock tones. That
reverb.
Yeah, that way reverb out guitar.
Well, from an innovation standpoint, definitely something that wasn't being done. The reason I didn't keep it on my 10 is because surf music had a moment, but I don't feel like I don't feel like there's a ton today that has like this direct connection mm-hmm. back to what Dick Dale was doing. But what he did, I think, was still really important for showing like you don't have to do stuff this like mm-hmm. I would imagine a kid hearing that would have been pretty mind-blowing, hearing that for the first time 1962, was it?
Yeah. And it's cool, it stands up. It's so cool.
So if you own
today,
like if you own a guitar in 1962 and you're playing traditional standards and you hear that, you're suddenly going to look at your guitar totally different. Mm-hmm. Like I could do something with this that I never mm-hmm. thought possible.
Yeah.
Which in that regard, super, super important.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. You mentioned like surf music's moment. Cause I think you're right. Like you don't think of surf music itself continuing for that long, but I wonder if it ties into other musical genres that are geared towards a specific like subculture.
Sure. Yeah.
And more, it's more like early 60s. You don't have a lot of rebellious sounding music, right? And maybe this was
could
it
been.
You don't even have distorted guitars yet. It wasn't
it was
2 years later that the Kinks record is it You Really Got Me Now?
Yeah.
Or All Day All Night? Mm-hmm. Whichever one was first, like they had to make their own distortion by poking a hole in his speaker.
When did Link Wray record what's the name of the, I'm gonna look it up. There's a Link Wray instrumental song. It's an instrumental song that got banned from the radio because it was considered like so rebellious.
Wow.
And it's one, there's a great, you can look it up on YouTube. There's a video of Jimmy Page listening to it and talking about how important it was.
Hmm.
But yeah, so it could be, you're probably right that there was an element of
I would say that this, even though it sounds very different, I think the attitude of it could be related to,
I'm
like,
sure it influenced a ton of stuff.
Skate music, punk.
Rumble, it's Link punk, Ray Rumble.
And just the reverb and the, I mean, you were saying a kid in 1962 listening, that would be amazed. Well, my brother in the 80s, late 80s, is listening to music and learning how to play the guitar. And this was, you know, super influential to him in terms of just how cool it sounded, you know.
I guess another thing that we haven't mentioned yet, that this started in the 50s and really took off in the 60s. This is the first time, I would think, in history that people are writing music specifically geared towards teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because, one, they start having some of their own income. Two, they're now with recordings, you can buy records. Mm-hmm. You can listen to it in your own room. It's not just the family's radio. So before, I think everything was geared towards adults. The moms and dads chose what the family was going to listen to. Right. Now the kids can listen to it on their own.
They can listen to their own stuff.
Well, and I think it was also, they were starting to look at, again, the form itself as a means to say something,
mm-hmm.
or actually, you know, rebel or try to
do something different.
Do something with it. Yeah.
Cool.
Link Ray Rumble.
Does anyone else have a 62?
No, my first is 63.
Are we on to 63?
Same.
Sorry, I just found Link Ray Rumble. You can cut this out. So it was a 50s. It's this really cool, uses this phaser pedal, 1958 instrumental. It was banned because the name Rumble was the name of a fight, of a gang fight. And so U.S. radio markets banned it because they were worried that it was
going to incite gang violence.
It's just this cool, like, instrumental guitar piece. Really cool. But
what year was it?
Because 1958. It was banned, an instrumental guitar piece, Link Ray Rumble.
When was West Side Story written? Because it's all about the gangs rumbling and stuff like that. The
movie was mid-60s.
Yeah.
I don't know if the musical was, how much earlier that was.
Link Ray Rumble. That's interesting. That's cool.
All right, 63.
Who's up? I've got one, but you've got one too.
I got one,
you haven't gone yet.
Go for it.
I'm guessing one of you might have this, maybe not. Super important song, one of my favorites. 1963, Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yep.
You got it?
I do.
I love this song. So this one was based on, I told you in the last recording, kind of my affinity for protest music. So this isn't like traditional in-your-face protest music, but this is kind of defiance to mistreatment. It kind of his ode to that. It was based on real events. Him and band members were turned away from a restaurant, I think somewhere in the Midwest. And that's kind of what formulated writing this song, but it just sounds so authentic. You really believe every word he's saying, and his voice is so good. It's actually interesting to listen to this Sam Cooke compared to the Sam Cooke from the 50s that I picked, and you can really sense kind of the personal growth in his voice. He's just putting it all out there. I love this song.
Let's hear it.
You want to add anything? Brandon had it.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh yes it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there.
This is beautiful. That's like, I think that's been the most silent all three of us have ever been during a song. You can't help but just be pulled in and just listen. Like, it's painful. That's a human telling story through art, and it's so good.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
So, goosebumps, like you're saying. Goosebumps. And the story behind it, not just this story, but you know, him getting kicked out of the hotel in Louisiana. Like, it's just so infuriating, so pathetic that that was ever a situation. And this is like after World War II, after all this stuff, and still, you just can't believe this is still an issue, that it ever was an issue. Hmm. It's just, yeah. But yeah, what an inspiring song.
Right. So for anybody that's ever needed to be defiant in the face of adversity, like using hope as defiance to adversity is kind of this really cool concept, and he just captures it perfectly.
Captures it. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. That's a goosebump song for sure.
Well, another song that didn't make it into my top 10, but I also love is Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Yeah. Mm,
which one. I feel are kind of two sides of the same coin, and both very legitimate emotions, expressions, whereas it seems like Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, he's more, I don't know, feeling that the change isn't going to come.
Right. Right.
Which I'm sure a lot of people felt that way.
Both valid emotions to share.
Mm-hmm. Great pick. Powerful stuff. 1963, my pick. This one, boy, this is one I struggled with because I gotta have a Beatles song in here. Mm-hmm. But how do I choose just one? Because the Beatles are so wide range, so versatile that, you know, I've got, I think, four of their songs that I was considering that each could be on here, and probably another one's going to show up. Mm-hmm. But since rock and roll itself was such a big thing, and that's what set the stage for the Beatles, even though they eventually did more than that, I think this really was a game changer for the whole music industry, for especially the genre of rock and roll, British Invasion, all that stuff. So I'm going with She Loves You by the Beatles from 1963. Not their first single, but one of the early, really popular ones by them.
Excellent. Yeah. Let's hear it. She loves you, yeah.
It's not on an album, I don't think. I think it was just a single.
So what do you love about it? What are you preserving?
My memory is that this is a thing that they were doing a lot in the 60s, is just releasing, they'd release albums, and they'd release singles.
Yeah, okay.
And they weren't necessarily matches. Right. In this one, this one is not, if I were only to pick a favorite Beatles song, this wouldn't be it. But in the context of this, it's one that I love. It's a great song. So they're taking the 50s rock and roll stuff that they're basing it on. But this one is their own original, which was unique. I mean, Chuck Berry and others were writing their own songs too. But this, I mean, Beatles, they start out more as a boy band, you know, just lots of covers,
bar band, yeah.
Yeah, good looking guys, clean cut, wearing uniforms,
bouncing their heads in unison.
But what they bring to it is they start writing their own songs. So their first album is half originals, and they've got these awesome 2-3 part harmonies. All of them can sing, all of them play instruments. And so I think that whole thing was a real game changer for a lot of the bands. Like, then because of this, you get to the other bands like Rolling Stones and Kinks, and those guys saying, "Whoa, crap! Now we have to start writing our own songs too." And so it, like I said, after this, the idea of being a cover band was gone. And I love, like, they're even tweaking the, it's not just your standard G, C, and D chords anymore. They're adding a little bit more complexity to the rock. And I just love the joyfulness of it. It's just so fun listening to this stuff.
So I think I just figured something out. So I'm going to make an on-air confession, which isn't going to surprise anybody. this is why Brandon is a good human being and I'm kind of reprehensible. I despise effervescence. Like, I want my music and I want my movies to leave me feeling a little bit lousy, like to question a little bit. And so I listen to it and I'm like, this is nice. So I'll talk about it more. Like, I've never, like, I can listen to a Dylan song and I'll be like, that I get. Like, I feel that. I've felt that before. 95% of the time I listen to a Beatles song, I'm like, I never felt like that. It's that effervescence. It's just that, like, the bouncy smile. The There's giddy. Just a bouncy smile.
See, what you're saying, though, is true about Brandon. He is a good human being. And I relate to, because we'll talk about movies, and he'll be like, why are you like this movie that's dark and shows humanity is dark and soulless and hopeless? Why would you? And then he's like, he's trashing on movies. I'm like, well, what did you think when you saw it? Well, I've never seen it. He's like, why would I want to watch that? I'm like, no, but it's...
Wait, are you referring to our conversation last week about Pretty Women?
No, yes. No, this is...
I don't think I need to see that to be able to judge it.
Remember our discussion about American, about indie films? And you're like, I hate indie films because they're... That's the dark,
you're
the,
misrepresenting
the
me.
Grittiness.
You're misrepresenting me.
But and I'm, it's I guess supposed to be a compliment that you're a good human.
Looking at my top 10 here, yeah, there's not a lot that are dark, but there's a few I can appreciate. Here's if you see a theme in my picks or my influences, it's not darkness or grittiness that I'm against, or that I'm like Jason, I can connect with that. If it's a song about pain or needing to express that kind of thing, great. Yeah. That's obviously has value. Where I don't get into it so much is if it's just trying to push buttons, just trying to be naughty or transgressive, that kind of thing. I'm like, we don't need more of that.
I think this is where we've had discussions about Lars von Trier,
yes,
Harmony Korine.
There we go. Lars von Trier. Harmony the world Korine. Does not need Lars von Trier.
And Harmony Korine was another one we've talked about. And
I don't know that I've seen any of his to judge. Right. But
really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're messy. They leave you feeling lousy.
But not
so,
just
yeah,
lousy.
It depends on their purpose
I don't even know
of
if I want to mention them on air of the lousiness. They don't need to go seek out Harmony Korine. But no, good. No, okay, good. You've defended. You've represented yourself.
I like
well.
That. I like that. You know, you don't want just the pushing buttons. And I think that comes up, right? Like a lot of music, a lot of whether it's music, movies, art, like, is there value in just pushing buttons? And I think that argument, you're saying, no, not just pushing buttons. Also bring something to the table other than just I am trying to be a troll.
63. Anybody, so that was a 63? Is that right?
63. Well, yeah. Except Sam Cooke turns out was 64. Uh-oh. For all you trolls that are going to get on and correct us.
Don't at me. So are we doing... Well, I don't have... Okay.
64.
I don't have a 64.
I've still got 63s.
Oh.
I'm still coming.
Okay, yeah, Jordan.
Bang them out.
I'm like adjusting as I go because this is super hard. Okay. So I've got basically 4 63s here, but I have to choose two of them. So I'm going to go first with a song written by Antonio Carlos Jobim on the album called Getz Gilberto. So performed by
great album.
João Gilberto and Stan Getz. And I'm going to choose, instead of choosing Girl from Ipanema, which is kind of the obvious choice, I'm going to choose Corcovada. I don't know how you say that in Portuguese, Corcovado or something like that. 1963, Girl from Ipanema was the hit, and it deserves to, it's a great song, but there's two reasons I'm choosing
that one's on my honorable instead. Mention
the Girl from Ipanema. I think I read that it's the second most widely recorded song after Yesterday, after the Beatles' Yesterday, which is, it's a little Wikipedia fact for you, but in the Me Too movement, it's a little creepy because it was like these older guys watching like a teenager walking to the beach every day, and she was beautiful, and they wrote a song about her. And also, if you want, if you're a little more like, if you want actually a romantic song to play with your, you know, if you're a youngin' with your girlfriend, or if you're older like us with your spouse or whatever in between, you know, you don't want to listen to a song that's about how beautiful another woman is, right? So Corcovado is the song. 1963. You got Stan Getz on the tenor saxophone,
and the Getz Gilberto combo had a really important cultural moment. Yeah. But they recorded some good stuff. Their sound is so good.
That album is for me a top album of the 60s. Really one good. Of the top albums of the 60s.
They recorded like three albums together. The cover art on all of them is beautiful cover art, and then the albums themselves are just really good listens.
Quiet nights of quiet stars.
Is that Astrid Gilberto singing?
Is Astrid, yeah.
She's good. She's got a good voice.
Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams. Quiet walks by quiet streams. And a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely.
So this album was, as far as I know, this is like the most popular bossa nova album that crossed over into the American mainstream. That ushered in this popularity of bossa nova, Brazilian jazz. And it's just, it's, you know, jazz.
Which had a huge cultural impact in the 60s. Like, it crept in, didn't just creep in, like, it became central soundtrack pieces and even set pieces, like, in movies and in TV. That, like, that bossa nova became really inseparable from that era.
And it's unfortunate. A lot of people hear Girl from Ipanema now and they think, oh, this is elevator music. It's just kind of relegated to something that's cheesy, or you hear it in a department store or something. But this album is so good, so cool. Jazz music itself had, you know, passed its peak. Jazz was past its peak at this time. And this brought, in terms of popular, it was, you know, jazz was no longer pop music. This was its last little foray into pop music, I think you could say, because it was actually on the pop charts.
Props to Jord for picking a song that I have never heard before.
Have you heard the album? You should listen to the
whole... I've heard Girl from Ipanema, but...
The whole album.
I thought you knew this album. Nope.
Yeah, the whole Brandon. Album is a super cool
this
album.
This album, you will love this album.
This podcast is serving its purpose.
Yeah.
An audience of
Amen.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You have another 63?
I've got another 63, and I've got to choose between Bob Dylan, the Ronettes... And I'm gonna go.
Want me to choose for you?
Well, I'm gonna go with the Ronettes. I love Bob Dylan, but you've got Bob Dylan, and so I'm bringing this. That's why you've got Bob Dylan's back.
You're just trolling me.
Yeah, here's the thing.
You're saying that if it was just up to you, Jord, to choose 10 songs, that you'd leave Bob Dylan off. Is that what you're saying?
What I am saying.
That's what you're not saying. So you're counting on Jason.
I feel
to fill
like
the gap.
I like Bob Dylan, but I haven't actually put in the time. So I need to go back and do some work before I can like pretend like I know what I'm talking about. And it's not like I know what the Ronettes, but I know this song better than I know the Dylan song. I was gonna go with Blowin' in the Wind, which is a great song, but I'm going to go
also
with the Ronettes.
My honorable mention.
This is more of the Phil Spector era kind of stuff. So Be My Baby by the Ronettes,
I'm almost crying right now.
It's more because I got to go do my research on Dylan more. I can't pretend like I know him well enough to speak on him, and I like him, so I need to spend more time. All right, be okay. My baby.
Oops.
Oop.
Ron, that sounds like Stan Getz.
So I have a request. Let's do this. I like it when we play it and we're all quiet for like, let's give it at least 12-13 seconds.
Yeah.
And then we start talking.
Also, we're recording these all separately, so anytime.
You can
even
if
we are talking, I can cut out your voices if
I like
or
the,
move it to.
I like the like at least 10 seconds of just the song, because I think the listener's ready for the song.
Okay, mm-hmm. So here is the song that for Jordan beat out Bob Dylan. This beat my. Just kidding.
So, I'm not an expert on these guys either. I'm not an expert on Dylan. But in my research, I found a quote from Brian Wilson that he felt like this was one of, if not the best, album ever recorded.
It's pretty dang good.
And it was very, supposedly it was kind of a peak R&B kind of rock.
You can see a ton of Beach Boys.
Yeah, what studio did it come out of? Is it?
I don't know.
It's not like Tamla Motown, is it?
I do not know, but I believe it was a Phil Spector.
Oh, yeah,
produced.
That's got to be. That's Phil Spector. That's Wallace Sound stuff.
Yeah. So I listened to that, and I tried to hear it from this, where we had come from, listening to the 50s stuff, and I felt like this had, like, this was kind of like pop music at a perfect moment, right? And so I, you know, basically what it came down to with Bob Dylan is I looked at the song I had, and it was an important song, but it wasn't my favorite of his. And if I had more time, I would go back there and find my favorite 60s Bob Dylan song and replace Blowing in the Wind.
Yeah.
But only 10 choices. It's just not.
Oh, I hear you.
It's
just
hard.
That we're counting on. We knew that you were going to deliver the Dylan.
You're
going to
deliver the Dylan. If not, we'll do a whole episode on Bob Dylan. And you can teach us about Bob Dylan. You can just, you know, let us have it.
I think this is a like as a genre or movement, like, and it's not just the 60s, but this specific sound of the girl groups, the Ronettes, the Supremes, tons of them. Huge, really popular genre, and sounds great. There's a ton of these songs that I don't know anything about the bands or the albums in their.
Yeah,
in a whole, but singles, like, yeah, there's tons of them that I hear the song and I'm, wow, that's a great song.
That's a great song, yeah. Yeah, I was also low in the 50s in my representation of women. That played into it. And I got to think of the times and the representation. So that's mine, Ronettes, 1963. And that's the last of my 1963s, and I've got some 1964s.
Good words. It's a good song.
Yeah.
Some of mine that... I also considered that one. Also considered Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, the Shirelles, 1960.
Really good. Yeah.
And You Can't Hurry Love, the Supremes.
Yep. I had a Supremes on my honorable mention, Stop in the Name of Love, and You Can't Hurry Love. Yeah.
I had up until two, it was in 1960, but if we're talking female representation, I feel really bad about this one. I cut Etta James at last.
At last, yeah.
This morning at about 2 as well.
Same. 2 a.m. was a dark, dark time for you this morning.
It was hard. It was
you
really
had to,
hard.
You had to cut some of your prized choices.
So you're not going with Blowing in the Wind?
Nope.
You got a better Dylan song. I also had Blowing in the Wind on mine.
Let's hear it.
Hear it and talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll let you talk about how great it is.
Okay.
Is this your only Dylan pick?
You think I'm going to stick... I don't have room for two Dylan picks.
So I did research this song a little bit since I had it on my list, and then I bumped it off. So I did a little research, but I just feel like a poser talking about it because it's just...
This might be my third or fourth. No, this would probably be my fourth Dylan pick.
from the decade.
Yeah.
So for me, this seems like the one that maybe there was a song before this that put him on the map, but as far as I can tell, this is like the big hit that's made him a household name. And it kind of represents a lot of what his whole, I don't know if his whole career, but at least this moment in the 60s, the protest music, his gift with lyrics that really stick with you. And really a simple song, but also powerful ideas going on here.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a man...
What I really like about him, and this song in particular, he does not have what would be considered a great voice. It's got his voice. And in some other songs, it's too much for me. Like, I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
In other songs, it sounds like a guy like doing a Dylan impersonation.
Yeah. And like when they do him on Saturday Night Live, like, it's not all that exaggerated sometimes. Like, his actual recordings really sound like that. This one, it sounds more just like a normal guy. So I like that it's this idea of anybody, like, your voice, whatever voice you have, is good enough. Use that voice. And I love that it's just him and a guitar and a harmonica. Like, they just put a microphone in front of him, just recorded the song. They didn't need to do really anything production-wise. Yeah. It's just...
Yeah.
Sits down and plays it, and it's still so powerful. Just that.
Listening to that song belongs on the golden record. I was wrong.
So it wouldn't even be the Dylan one I would pick. I love it. It's like in my top four or five of the decade. But yeah, it's he. That's kind of the, I don't know. To me, that's like the transcendence of Dylan. Lyrically, I love poetry. I love clever and smart lyrics, and I love things in my art that make me have to like dig a little bit for meaning and like find something, and then when you find it, you're like, oh, I got it, I get it. Like, it makes it so much more rewarding.
Right.
It's like a step beyond just being entertained, and Dylan is like the best version of that I think we've ever had. His lyrics are like equal parts prophetic, provocative, and just a representation of what's going on. And he really, I think, encapsulates lyrically kind of the cultural strife that was going on in the 60s as well as anybody.
I've got two 64s. And the first one I'm going to do, this is my Beatles pick. It's not my favorite Beatles song, which I'm like, I could have done my favorite Beatles song, which would from the 60s, which would probably be Hey Jude. But this is the first song that like I really liked of the Beatles, and it's more of, it's the early song of theirs, or early-ish, that I love the most. It's A Hard Day's Night.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel
so this song, I remember my brother was a huge Beatles fan, so that and my mom was as well. And so my older brother, I remember hearing this song, and it was so catchy. It was so easy to learn in my head, so it was one that I would, you know, sing and run around and love it. But in researching a little more, like this was on the album, A Hard Day's Night,
mm-hmm.
and made for the movie, and they didn't even have a title for the movie, but they needed a song for the movie, and I guess Ringo was he had these like idiosyncratic things that he'd say where he'd try to say like a catchphrase.
It's kind of a Yogi Berra catchphrase.
Yeah, and
guy.
He'd mess up. You know, he'd say the wrong thing. And so this was one of those where he said, it's been a hard day's night. Or what was the actual thing he said? I can't remember. But it was, but anyway, so John loved it. He thought it was hilarious. And so he took it and made a song out of it in like a day. And then it became the title track to the movie. And I think they had already finished filming the movie. Isn't that right? I think. Anyway.
I don't know the story behind it.
Yeah. But, yeah. What do you have to say about it, Brandon? Because we know Jason's got something, but...
No, I'm not going to troll you. Like, their brilliance is yeah. they make really catchy, seemingly simple stuff. I know there's more complexity to it. I'll give you my Beatles rant here in a little bit. Yeah. They were craftsmen. They were phenomenal craftsmen, and they created just... That
some
catchiness.
Great, some great pop music, yeah.
Like, the thing you said that I think is really important is how easy, like, I think your verbiage was easy to learn.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were talking to actually playing it or just to be able to sing along
just
with
singing,
it.
Just singing, just knowing
but
the
But I think
song.
That's part of the catch. Like, any person that speaks the language could listen to that and within minutes be able to sing along. And that's a really unique skill to be able to put something out that's catchy enough that people want to, but easy enough that they can with that. And when you can do that and a whole like culture is suddenly singing along with you,
right?
That's a pretty powerful statement.
What you're saying now, so a lot of times catchy music or really poppy music, it's kind of like, oh, it's too corny or too cheesy. But I think they were really good at straddling that line between really catchy, really poppy, but it still seemed cool and edgy, at least at the time. I mean, The lyrics, you know, there's the sexuality in the song, in the lyrics, you know.
Is there?
Yeah, about when I come home at night, like he's all tired, but everything you do makes me feel all right. Huh. You know, he's singing to this girl about, you know, like how miserable he is when he's gone. And then
I just think
home.
He's talking about a good, fulfilling relationship.
Yeah.
Which sure sexuality can be a part of.
Staying up late.
It's not.
Staying up late and
its
talking.
Its entirety.
Staying up late and talking. Yeah, that's what John was doing. And Paul, after the long night playing at the bar and taking home a groupie that they've never met before.
All right, kids, let's fast forward a little bit. And
wait, what? Is this really something we're just making for like kids?
No.
Okay. Kids need to have the sex talk. Let's just do it right here. Oh. Kids, something happens when you listen to rock and roll with a girl.
According to Gene R. Cook.
What? Gene R. Cook.
You haven't heard this story?
No.
We'll get into this later.
According to Boyd K. Packer, Mick Jagger.
That's what I'm talking about. It's Gene R. Cook. It's Gene R. It's not Boyd K.
It's all of them. It's all part of the lore.
So, yeah, the Beatles have this simplicity, this catchiness. But they also have, especially in their hits, the standout hits, there's enough in there that you don't get the first time. Like, you come back to it, and you're like, oh, there's that I didn't notice. There's layers to it.
Yep.
Like, for example, in Hard Day's Night, just listening to it now, I was thinking how fantastic Ringo's drumming is.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't know if it's like bongo drums or what, but that rhythm he's doing...
Yeah.
Like, he's got some really cool drum grooves going on that's not your standard rock stuff. And I love how they've got the two singers. They don't switch off so often. It's usually one's the lead and the other's the harmony. But in this one, they've got they switch off leads. John takes the verses, Paul does the chorus.
Right.
Brilliant. Interesting. We should take a break for a word from our sponsor. This segment is brought to you by Root Beer. Thank you, Root Beer, for satisfying our podcast needs.
And not just any root beer.
Yes, any root beer.
Henry Weinhardt's root beer. Gourmet soda. Draught style head.
Please don't sue us for mentioning you on our podcast. You're great.
No, they won't appreciate sue us. You, Henry Weinhardt. They're going to pay us, if anything.
We don't even need you to pay us this time. This one's free, Weinhardt.
They wouldn't. Why would they sue us?
I don't know. Isn't there legal issues? Like,
no, if you're like...
M&M's wouldn't let Steven Spielberg use them in E.T. He wanted to use M&M's, and they wouldn't let him.
Nowadays...
So he's like, screw you, I'm using Reese's Pieces.
We're in a new age, man. Companies want any mention right. they can get. They
all right, Weinhardt's, this one's for you guys. Thanks for making a fantastic product. Okay, who else? Anyone got a more 64?
I've got one more. It's heavy on me right now. Okay, my next one is Nina Simone. Protest song. This is a more in-your-face protest song. Speaking of protest songs, she had a great song from the 50s that I left off. That's probably my favorite song of hers, which is "I Loves You, Porgy." Anyway, this one is "Mississippi Goddamn," yeah. Which on the title on the album was notated as Mississippi, and then kind of symbols like exclamation point, asterisk, you know, the kind of cursing symbols. This is a
This is on my honorable mention. This one and Backlash Blues are on my honorable mention.
This is a beautiful... I mean, it's just a... It's a direct
this
protest
This one hurts.
Song.
This one is painful.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
And I love the anger in it. It's like a really righteous indignation, appropriate anger. And yeah, so Nina Simone, one of my favorite artists of the decade for sure.
This one was close to making mine, just didn't quite make it.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. I mean every word of it. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest.
So I didn't know about Nina Simone and hadn't listened to her until basically I was dating my wife and she had Nina Simone, probably a greatest hits or something, and we would listen to it and she was amazing and she's really influential in a lot of great R&B and soul and hip hop artists and Lauryn Hill, Erykah Badu, many others. So many great songs on those that she did, and this one is a great protest song. So yeah,
love it. It's a super nice companion piece with a song called "Backlash Blues." But she had there's an interesting biopic of her on, or no, it's a documentary on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was channeling a ton of anger into her music, and it comes through in her song titles, in her performance, and a lot of her performance was very like blatant. When you hear the live ones, she will very blatantly describe like what she's angry with, and she's a really important artist to dig into. I like that.
This one written by her?
I don't even know. I think so, but I'm not sure. She was classically trained, I believe, at Juilliard, so a pianist. And then so you'll hear some
wasn't
of her
first album just solo piano stuff.
I actually don't know that. I wouldn't be surprised. But a lot of her jazz and blues stuff, she'll go into a solo and she'll be, you know, swinging the notes like jazz musicians do, and then she'll go into more of a kind of straight, almost a counterpoint fugue thing, like classical thing, in the middle of her solo, you know, or something. So she would mix in classical elements in a way. But in the 60s, she became a huge voice in kind of civil rights, but had her own personal demons kind of with her relationship. She was a really abusive relationship with her husband that she couldn't get out of. So she was this really powerful woman on stage, really like voice of like black anger. But then in her own like marriage, she was really stuck and couldn't get out of this really abusive relationship.
Yeah, really toxic relationship.
That's my 1964.
Okay. Is that it for 64?
That's it.
Yeah, my next one's a 65.
Well, maybe we should conclude this episode, part one of 1960, and because it's more than an hour right now.
It's almost, yeah, and it's almost noon.
I mean, we can keep recording, but okay. We'll just make this a little division. So, we'll take a break. We'll divide this podcast into two episodes. So that was part one of the hits from the 1960s. We'll catch y'all later.